Good evening. This is Profiles. I'm Bob Willard, and welcome to another interesting evening of meeting folks that make a difference in South Central Indiana. Today we have as our guest Andrea Ofterheide. You may say, who is Andrea Ofterheide? Well, she is someone who had a dream, and the dream came true. Well, let's hear about the dream and the lessons it taught. Oh, yes. The world knows Andrea Ofterheide as Finney. Okay, let's get started. Thank you for coming. And what was the dream?
My dream was to go up to Alaska and be on the Iditarod Trail, be a part of it.
In what way?
Well, I wanted to be the first teacher on the trail to report back to my little classroom about the life skills that the mushers and the dogs were using to achieve a goal.
Now, you're trying to make this answer way too short. I'm not going to let you get away with that. The dream had to come sooner than just the life skills.
Yeah.
So go back and talk about when you first started recognizing.
Well, I think many years ago when my sister lived in Alaska, I would visit her. And so Alaska became a very favorite spot for me to go to. Then when I started teaching first graders, I decided that I had to have something different to teach my little first graders and something that I loved. And so the Alaska was very, going to Alaska was very important. And then learning about the Iditarod sled dog race was very important. And I thought little kids would love to hear about that. And so that's kind of how I started it in my classroom.
Well, could you explain a little bit about the race and how long it takes?
Yeah.
And all?
Well, it's they say 1,049 miles, and only because the 49 is because it is the 49th state. But it's actually more than that. It's like 1,100 and some miles. And it goes from Anchorage to Nome. And there are many little checkpoints along the way. And the checkpoints can be just little tents. They can be little houses. They can be centers in the villages. It may be the center where they have bingo. Some are heated with just wood-burning stoves. Some don't have any water in them. So it's, you know, you're out in the wilderness, so the checkpoints are just whatever place is available for the mushers to take a rest and for the veterinarians to be housed, and volunteers will stay there too.
So the participants only go so far each day?
They can go as far as their dogs are willing to go. They usually, while they're out on the trail, they'll stop every 2 hours and give them a snack and rest them. And as they come into the checkpoints, there's a race judge there and a person called a checker. There, as soon as they arrive, the time is written down because this is really a timed race. They leave Anchorage at the start, at the restart, every 2 minutes. And so it doesn't matter, you know, where you are. Your time at the finish is what's really important. And so they're checked when they come in, and the time is written down. And if the musher says, oh, my dogs really need to have a longer rest, they'll stay there maybe 4 hours, maybe 6 hours. There are two mandatory 8-hour rests and one mandatory 24-hour rest that all mushers have to take.
And how many participants were in this?
This year there were 56.
And each of them has how many dogs?
They start out with 16 dogs. Okay. And they can finish with no less than 5. And as the dog, they may have young dogs that they're training to become familiar with the trail. And if a dog becomes tired or if a dog is young, they'll say, well, I'll drop it at this checkpoint. And dropping it means they just let the dog stay there, and then a bush plane eventually comes in, picks it up, takes it back to Anchorage. Or we'll take it, if they're closer to Nome, they'll take it on to Nome.
Okay, so the dogs are treated okay.
Oh, absolutely. There are 3 to 4 veterinarians at every checkpoint that watch the gaits of the dogs as they come in, and then they immediately use a stethoscope and check their heartbeats. They take the dog's temperatures. They check their feet to make sure there are no splits in between the paws, and they weigh the dogs because they don't want the dogs to lose too much weight. So, yeah, they're really checked over, better than the mushers are, actually.
Okay.
Right.
We don't care about you guys.
No,
it's
right.
Just the dog.
Right.
Okay, now what was your part in this? I'm a little curious. We've heard about the race. Now, what
okay.
did you do?
Well, what my dream was to go when, because my school is a class school, which focuses on life skills and a real life experience, my goal was to go out on the trail and to really see what these mushers and the dogs are doing, to see how they use perseverance, how they use problem solving, how they use responsibility. All the life skills that I teach in my classroom, I knew were being used out on the trail, and I wanted to go and show my kids that to achieve a goal, you have to use these life skills. The mushers use them, and the dogs even use them. So that was my dream, was to be able to get up there out on the trail and really see that these life skills were being used. And it was wonderful. It was absolutely exactly what I thought was happening happened.
But why the Iditarod? It could have been the Tour de France or something else like that. I mean, where did the dream of going to that particular event come from?
You know what? I think many, many years ago when I was growing up, I lived outside of Philadelphia in a small little town, and we lived out in the country. And so I was outside a lot. I didn't have a next door neighbor little girlfriend that I could play with. I had to play with my brother and sister. And I spent a lot of my time outdoors, and I was always going to the animal shelter and bringing home a dog. I absolutely adored animals. So dogs would come home, I would play outside, and I was encouraged to do that. So, and in the area where I lived in Pennsylvania, we had very cold winters. So I spent the winters outside skating or sledding. We'd shovel the old ponds so that we could ice skate, and I'd be out for hours. So I love the cold weather. I have always loved the cold weather. I love dogs dearly. And I guess right now, at this point in my life, I like adventure. So what else could there be except the Iditarod that encompasses all of those wonderful things?
Have you always had this spirit of adventure? I mean, is this something that you know, lay dormant and
yes,
came out or what?
It probably has. I think as a young girl, I always wanted to be outside. And then I worked at camps when I was in college. I went to camp as a young girl. And then I did what I was to do, as everybody does in the 50s and 60s. You take care of your children. You raise your family. My children are grown. They're out doing their own things in their lives, and it was time for me now maybe to be able to do and to let free the wonderful thoughts of having an adventure and going on an adventure and enriching my life and taking a risk and doing something that I had never done before. It's not that I regretted the time of not being able to do that, but now was the time that I could finally do it.
Well, you still had your health and everything.
Yes. Yes. I knew this was the perfect time.
Okay. Those of us that lived in Bloomington had an opportunity to read your journals as you sent them into the Herald Times. But there must be some events that happened. And how did you get around? And I mean, just fill us in on.
Well, I had my first adventure of being on a bush plane. This was scary for me because I had flown in little planes before, and I always turned green, and I didn't want people to know that I was fearful of a bush plane, or I would have never been allowed to do this because I knew my own way of traveling was going to be in a bush plane. So there was a friend, a dad of a girl that I'd had, a student I had in my class a number of years ago, would write to me and sent me a message and said, look, I'll take you up in my Cessna and you can get used to this and then you can know that it'll be okay. You'll be fine. Well, I kept avoiding answering him because I kept thinking, gosh, do I really want to find out I can't do this? Or, you know? So finally, I get an email message and it says, Finney, when are you going to do this? So finally, I wrote back and I said,
capital
okay.
Capital letters. And
yeah. You know, come on. Yeah. So I wrote back and said, okay, this weekend. We'll do it this weekend. And I went up and it was fine. I did fine, but I'm thinking, okay, this is not in the wilderness. This is not up in Alaska. But I felt good about it. I thought, well, I've done this, so, you know, now I can. But I did go to my doctor, and I did get some medicines to take along with me. But, of course, I left them in Anchorage, so I had to do this on my own. So the first bush plane I get in, I'll never forget, Frank was my pilot. Kind of looked like you with a beard, you know.
And oh, good-looking
yes,
guy.
Yes, he was. And he was very friendly and very nice. And so he throws all my gear in. And this was for the Junior Iditarod, which was just a two-day race for 14 to 17-year-old kids. And so he said, Finney, okay, you know, now you get in. Well, I looked where I was supposed to step up into this plane. My boots are huge. My Trans-Alaskan suit was too long and too big. So I have to hike it up and get my feet in so that I can get them in this small space. I mean, these are very small planes. And I get in and I get all strapped down from the top and strapped down, you know, across me. And we take off. We're on a frozen lake and we fly around in a circle and we're flying up into the air. And I look down and all I see is snow and trees and wilderness. We're flying along and all of a sudden his door pops open. Right? So I grabbed...
Was it still attached?
Yes, okay. but it popped open, and I grabbed the back of his chair, his seat, and I'm hanging on to it. And I said, Frank, your door's open. He said, oh, Finney, I just did that to get you closer to me. So, you know, later on, he said, do you realize, truly, if a door pops open like that, there's no way you can fall out. But, you know, I didn't know. So that was my first adventure in a bush plane, but I dearly loved flying in a bush plane. And now, not too long ago, I was driving home from school and I looked up and here was a little plane flying in the sky. And I kept thinking to myself, I'd give anything to be up in that plane. I really passionately love flying in little planes. Never thought I would ever feel the way I do, but I do.
And the plane took you from these checkpoints to checkpoints.
Yes, and I would stay. I would stay at a checkpoint for 2 or 3 days, so I would see different teams come through, and that gave me time to visit schools in the villages, to talk with teachers, to just traipse around in the wilderness. So I, by not just staying one day and then flying off, and besides, pilots were doing other things. You know, I wasn't their number one priority. By a long shot. You know, if a pilot happened to be coming in and picking me up, it was wonderful. And maybe I was traveling with dogs in the back of the plane that I had to sit in the back with and take care of. So, you know, they knew I was out on the trail, but I never knew when I was going to move on. All of a sudden, a pilot would come in and he'd start yelling, I came to pick the teacher of the trail up. Come on, Finney, we're on our way. And I never knew where I was heading out to, but I knew I had to be ready at all times. That was one of the big things I was told by the pilots. You know, every morning I packed up my gear because I never knew when I was going to be called upon to move. Now, when they flew me into a checkpoint, they just dropped me off. They dropped me off on the top of mountains. They dropped me off on river bottoms. And I had to find my way to the village. I was on my own. But when they came to pick me up, how nice it was, you know, they would come to where the checkpoint was and say, oh, I've come to pick up Finney.
The teacher of the trail?
On the trail.
On the trail.
Yes.
Did you get a title?
I was. And these little village people that were so dear and so sweet. I have the most wonderful story about seeing the Northern Lights. Wonderful. I was in this wonderful little village called Nikolai that's on the Kuskokwim River. And I had been there a couple of days, and I said to one of the little, they were high school kids, or they weren't even high school kids, they were probably middle school kids, that were in charge of feeding the fire. It was just a little shack with a wood-burning stove, and we slept on the floor around the wood-burning stove to stay warm. And that was when it was minus 60 degrees. The wind was whipping. It was very, very cold. And so I had said one night to the boys, I said, if the Northern Lights come out, you must come and get me because I have to see them. I haven't seen them in their glory yet. Well, the door flew open in the middle of the night, and these kids came running in and they're yelling, "Teacher, teacher, we need the teacher. Come out, come out. The lights are dancing. The lights are in the sky." So I jump in my Trans-Alaska suit, get my boots on, and I go running out the door, and there's a little elder of the village standing out there. And he looked at me and he said, "Teacher," he said, "look at those lights." And I looked up, and from one side of the sky to the other, one side they were swirling in colors of pinks and reds and greens and blues, and on the other side they were coming down from the sky. It was like a shower coming, and they were changing colors. It was absolutely the most magnificent thing I've ever seen in my life. And this little elder came up to me and he said, "Teacher, if you whistle, you will make them dance, and they will dance for you." Well, it was so cold, there was no way in the world that I could get my lips pursed together to whistle. And I'm looking at him and thinking, he wants me to do this, and I wanted to do it so badly for him. And I finally said, I cannot get my lips together to whistle. "Oh, no worry," he said. "Teacher, I'll take care of it for you. I'll whistle for you." So he starts whistling, and he would say, "See? See them dance, Finney? See them?" And of course, I saw them dance, and I saw them doing everything wonderful for me. And it was interesting because we stood outside, and he's whistling, and I'm watching, and his grandson was the one who had come in to get me out of the little shack we were in. And he said, "Finney, come with me." So I walked off with him, and we walked down toward the river, and he said, "I have to tell you a story." He said, when we were little, my grandfather used to tell us that if we whistled, the Northern Lights would dance. And he said, we all believed that. And he said, but in the dancing, they would come down out of the sky. And he said, it scared us all. So we would hide our heads because we were afraid these lights would come down from the sky and get us. And he said, it's only been in the last few years that I can look up and really enjoy them. Because he said, it was fearful. We were afraid of the Northern Lights before that because my grandfather would say, "Oh, yeah, we'll make them dance and they'll come down out of the sky."
Control of the supernatural.
Yeah, so it was, but it was absolutely. And mushers talked about at the end of the race, they would talk about the lights in Nikolai. So it was really, it was for me, it was magnificent.
It was all done for you.
It was.
Right, you asked for it, you got it.
This whole journey, they had the most snow, they had the most cold, they had the most challenging race that they've had in years. And I know it was for me. I know it was.
I want to step aside for just a second. You mentioned life skills,
yeah.
And I know that's something that's happening in the elementary schools mm-hmm. now. Can you touch on that and then maybe expand on it and how you saw it in action in the Iditarod?
Okay. Every day in school, when there's a situation that maybe we need to have two children work through, we talk about, okay, how can we problem solve this? How can you show responsibility in this? In their daily work, did you use effort? Did you persevere in your work today?
Now, those are two of the skills, effort mm-hmm.
And perseverance.
Okay.
So throughout the day, you use all of these words to the children, and they in turn use them, and they know exactly what you're talking about. So not only, I'm sure all teachers do this in the schools, and we really focus on those. It's very, very important. Every Monday in my school, like this morning, we focus on a life skill for 2 weeks. The entire school focuses on this for 2 weeks. And so this morning, we had the life skill of cooperation. And what I did, I was to present, before I went to Alaska, how I was using that skill to get ready for my trip to Alaska. Well, today, I was to show how that life skill was used on the trail. So what I did was take a long rope, and I hooked two of my children. actually it was 8 children of in my classroom, had a Nanook dog in their hand, and they held on to the rope. So I had two together, you know, down this rope. But I had four of them facing to the right, four of them were facing to the left. And I said to the children in the whole school, looking at the way the dogs are on as my team, would they, if I were the musher, be able to get me to Nome? And I said, okay, now I would tell my team, let's go. So these four are pulling this way. These four are pulling the opposite direction. Could we achieve our goal of getting to Nome by doing it this way? Well, no, they said, no, it won't work. So I said, okay, I'm going to turn these four dogs around. So they turned around, and I said, all right, now as a musher, I'm going to give the command, let's go. And they all trotted off. And I said, they were cooperating. This shows cooperation. And the dogs had to cooperate as a team to make it to Nome, to achieve their goal of going to Nome. So this is how we show it. This is how I participate in having our school show how we use life skills. But other teachers will do that too. I mean, we'll have maybe another teacher read a story next week about cooperation, or their class will show how cooperation was used in their class.
Do you know what's, can you tell us what some of these words are?
Oh, I know. There's effort, there's perseverance, there's responsibility, there's problem solving, organization, initiative, integrity, help me.
Flexibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Sense of humor.
Oh, absolutely.
Patience.
Yes. Oh, see, and see, these are so perfect. These are what the mushers had to use while they were on the trail. They absolutely had to use every one of these. And I did too. Flexibility. You bet I had to be flexible all the time. I never knew where I was going to go and what I was going to do. I had to be flexible about bathing, brushing my teeth. I had to be patient. I had to be organized too, because I had to type up my journal ahead of time, and then I had to patiently wait until I could finally get on a line.
So it was. But the mushers have to do all this too.
Well, they're not writing stories.
No, I understand that, yeah. But they certainly have to have patience and perseverance.
And problem solving.
Oh, my
The dogs
gosh.
Are problem solving too, as well as the mushers. Organization. They had to have sent their food out ahead of time, and know they had to plan. They had to organize their whole race to know where they were going to take their 2 8-hour layovers and their 24-hour. So they had to be organized. They have to be responsible. They're responsible for their dogs.
Have to have courage.
Oh, yes. Flying in bush planes, you have to have courage.
Yes. And a sense of humor.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, look,
absolutely.
Why don't we take a break here and have some music? And I know you brought some rather unusual things, so why don't
Sure.
What would you say? What should we listen to?
Let's do My Kids, the tape that my children made. The Iditarod Trail song is just their little voices.
Okay, tell us where the kids are from and what class it is.
Okay, these children are from Finney's class at Rogers School, and they're second graders.
And we're going to hear them sing these songs.
You're going to hear them sing.
Well, let's
you
do
betcha.
It. You
betcha.
Okay.
Iditarod Trail. Well, give me a team and a good lead dog, and the sun
The songs we have just heard are sung by Finney's second grade class at Rogers School. Expand on the title.
My music teacher at my school, Helen Butler, has been wonderful this year to teach all the children in the school songs about the North since I was going to Alaska. And before I left to go to Alaska, they sang this song to me. So it really is quite special to me.
I just might remind our audience that our guest today is Finney. Now, Finney went on the Iditarod as the teacher of the trail or on the trail?
The first teacher.
So you were the originator of
right,
this.
Right, you bet.
And
right.
You created the job.
I did. And now they have a teacher for next year, which was, it's real hard for me to let it go because this was my idea. I really pursued this. This was my dream. And I did it. But I have to let it go.
Well,
that's
you just
hard.
Have to do something different.
I know.
Yeah.
You'll
have to fly around the world or something like that now that you can do small planes.
Right.
Okay. The name Finney, where did it come from?
Many years ago, when I taught special education, my name at that time was Finley. My last name was Finley. And I would have these little children come to me, and many of them were unable to speak. So I would use sign language, and we had the sign for Finn. And then when they would develop their speech, and the speech therapists worked very hard, they could say Finn, but it was very hard to say drop your tongue and say Lee, Finn Lee. So when they finally spoke, I became Finney. And I would have these children for 4 and 5 years. So then when I wasn't teaching special ed anymore and went to first grade, my name Finney went with me. And it is, I always cherished my years of teaching special education. They were very, very special to me. The children, the families were very special. And so it's an honor for me to be able to carry the name Finney throughout all of my teaching. So I'm delighted to just be called plain old Finney.
That's
very
funny.
Special.
That's what we'll call you.
That's,
Finney.
That's what I love.
So you came up and worked through special ed.
Uh-huh.
And were you always in education when you were working?
I was always in, when I graduated from my little college back in Pennsylvania, I had a job immediately because I had spent some time working at a special school for orthopedically handicapped children. And they wanted me, I volunteered my time, and so as soon as I graduated from college, they said, come here and be a teacher. Well, my little college that I went to, Moravian College in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, did not have a degree in special education, although I did my student teaching in it. So when I started working at this school for orthopedically handicapped children, I then had to go back and get certifications on my license. And so I went to Temple University and received certification in teaching mentally retarded children. And then I went to Westchester College to receive certification to teach orthopedically handicapped children. And then I was to get my master's. Well, I thought, I need to get it in something that's really going to be in the field of special ed, but not what I have. And that's how I heard of Indiana University, and they had a program teaching emotionally disturbed children. And so I came out here and got my master's in that area of special education. So many years of my teaching has been in the area of special education.
You have a real dedication to helping people, don't you?
Well, I love it. So if I can help people, that's fine. But I'm grateful. Whatever you give out, you get back. And I have been blessed and I have been fortunate. And look at this trip I just came back from. I mean, I didn't do this alone. Many people supported this and made my dream come true. I persevered, and I took the initiative, and I contacted people in Alaska and went up there with my portfolio. But people in this community, people in my school, parents, everybody helped it to happen. It was my dream, but you all made it come true.
You were still the guide dog, weren't you?
Yeah, lead dog.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. You can tell I haven't gone.
Yeah.
But you make it happen. It was your energy. It was your inspiration that all.
I will take credit for that.
But
I will.
Doesn't that carry over into your classroom?
Oh.
And how you teach all this?
Oh, it's been wonderful. I mean, it's been. I have been so excited. I have been so enthused. My class, I just hope, has benefited from this. I have been their teacher to actually show how life skills work. And I have had to use them. And that's what's so magnificent about this is that I hope each one of them, if they have learned nothing else this entire year, is that you can set a goal, you can have a dream, and then you can prepare. And it's not going to come true unless you prepare. That's very important. I mean, I had to send out the letters. I had to hustle around to try and get the money for this. And I had to get the gear. I had to get myself in shape. So you have to prepare. And then you use the life skills to help you achieve the goal. And every one of those little kids in my classroom, if nothing else, I hope they take that with them for the rest of their life. Because that's what's important for me to give them.
How has it changed your life?
Well, you know what? I've had to do things that I never, ever thought I could do. I was alone out on that trail, doing things that I didn't really know that I could do. I read about this and I knew kind of what it was going to be like, but you don't have an idea until you're out there. And the first time I was dropped off on a bush plane, I landed, and this was really for the real race. I'm out, dropped off, the pilot said, "See you later, Finney," and I'm standing on this river, and to the right and to the left is absolute wilderness, trees covered with snow. There was no one there to meet me. I'm standing there by myself, and I see a path go to the right, and I see a path through the woods going to the left, and I had no idea where I was supposed to go. I was on my own. And, you know, I made it work.
Problem solving.
You bet. You bet. And that's I think, what makes me so proud of myself for doing this, is that I pushed myself to the limits, not having sleep, walking. I walked miles uphill and downhill to the river, back up. I learned so much. I watched these veterinarians work all night long. I would be up with them because I was so excited about being there on the trail. And I learned from them. I learned from the mushers. They would talk to me about different foods that they had fixed and different things they were trying out with their dogs and with themselves to make this race a success. So before I went out on the trail, I had to talk to schools in Anchorage. And I'm not a public speaker. My mouth gets gummy. You know, my stomach rolls. This has been very hard. I've had to go speak in front of groups here in Bloomington, which has been very difficult for me to do. I'm the kind of person that you tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. But I'm not going to be jumping out in front of you. And I had to do that. I had to make myself be the lead dog. You see? So it changed my life.
Well, you took a risk.
I took a risk. I did take a risk. And I did it. And I was up on this trail by myself in very, very cold weather with people I didn't know. I'm flying in airplanes with pilots. I don't know anything about these people. But you know what? I know they cared about me and they wanted me to have a successful journey. I think they felt my enthusiasm. They felt my excitement. They felt my genuineness of really having a reason to do this and not just being out on the trail and just being on a journey. They knew in my heart there was a real reason for this, and they saw that.
Now, can we step back and start at the beginning? What was it that nurtured this sense that finally came to fruition at this time in your life? What, growing up, what was your life like? Where did you go to school? What are the things that helped make you the person that was able to make that decision?
To know that I really wanted to do this. Well, I have a little mother. She's not very tall, but she's a strong person. And I think that my mom probably put inside of me all. She allowed me to do the physical things that really made me able to do this trip. She taught us how to swim by having us lay across a little step ladder and had a bowl and big pan in front of us and was, you know, turning our heads from one side to the other so we learned how to breathe properly. She was the one who would say, go out and ice skate. Go play field hockey. You know, she really encouraged the physical side of me, even though she's a very little lady. I think she wanted to be 5'10", and maybe she's 4 feet. And so she was there to be behind me to say, just go. Go do it. You can do it. You know, you can do anything you want to be. And then there was my dad, who always loved Zane Grey stories. He loved the West. He was the adventurer. You know, he would live, I think, these adventures through Zane Grey. So I think between the two of them, they look at me and they think, well, you know, my mother is saying, maybe she got the spirit from me. You know, I got her out there to do all these things. And then my father is maybe saying, but I loved all this adventure, the adventure stories, the Zane Grey stories. And so maybe she got that from me. So I think they really allowed me to do these things. They didn't ever say, no, you can't do it. Never. So I think that probably has been inside me all these years. And you know, even though I knew, you know, you're supposed to be this type of person, and I could be that person. I could be the person that wore the right clothes and acted the right way and had the right manners. But yet there was always this on the right that I, or maybe that's the left, that I really wanted to be. You know, I needed to do something myself. And maybe, you know what else? Maybe it's because of being the middle child. My sister was always this wonderful. She was dramatic, and she was the actress, and so she was out. She was the front and stage person, and my brother was behind me, and you know, he was doing his own thing, and I kind of had to be in the middle, and do my own problem solving, figure things out for myself, and so I think I kind of always wanted to be a little bit different than the two of them, and. By golly, I guess I've done that, haven't I?
I'm sure neither one of them have been. Your sister lived there.
My sister lived there, but they never, I am sure they never expected that I would ever say, I'm going out on that trail and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this.
Well, outside of your parents, were there any other mentors, heroes, heroines, or code of ethics that gave you this sense of adventure? In the risk-taking?
You know, I remember I grew up in a Quaker family, and I remember going to Quaker meeting, and there was a wonderful lady, an older lady. Her name was Eliza Folk. And when she would stand and have a prayer to share with all of us, she would always talk about nature. And she was very soft, very well-spoken, but always focused on nature and always focused on you doing what's in your heart. And I loved her dearly. And I even kept many letters when I moved out here. She would write to me, and she always began them, dear Andy dear, and she would talk about thee is probably having a wonderful time. I know thee as well. And I have kept those letters that she wrote to me. And I think if Eliza knew what I had done, she would just say, Andy dear, I know thee has done well. You know, she was that, and she was this person, and I knew I could do what was in my heart, and I could be out in nature. I could be living a dream. So Eliza was very special. I really soaked in everything that she said. I really did.
Well, let's have some music. What would you like to have us listen to now?
Okay, my very favorite song is by Louis Armstrong, and it's What a Wonderful World. And I think that just says it all about my journey on the Iditarod Trail. So you have to play it?
Well, we're going to. Let's
Good.
Do it.
Good.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
We have just heard A Wonderful World sung by, and I think they call him Louis Armstrong now. I've noticed a lot of people announcing it, which was a selection of our guest, Finney, or if we want to be appropriate, Andrea Ofterheide. I mean, it sounds so poetic to give that name, but
isn't it
the
lovely?
Finney, but the Finney's so wonderful.
I know. The Finney is very special, but the Ofterheide is it means on the meadow, actually.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, so isn't it appropriate for me?
Yeah, it's predestined or something, whatever you might say.
That's right.
Finney, if someone were to come to you and say they had a dream, what advice would you give? Now, you've given a little bit of that earlier, but what would you say to them eyeball to eyeball?
Eyeball to eyeball. Boy, I would just tell them, if you have a dream, it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter where you are in your job or in your life. You have to have that dream fulfilled. You just go after it. You can do it. You can. If I could do this, if I could go up on the Iditarod Trail at the age of, and I will say, no, I won't say it. I, as an older woman.
Over adolescence.
Yes. Then anybody can. Life doesn't stop. Life just keeps going on. And you make it better. And one of the things that I learned about myself while I was out on the trail is that I must make my own happiness. And if my happiness is having a dream come true, then I have to go after that dream. If your happiness is having a dream that you're dreaming about come true, then you have to go after it. Part of the fun is preparing for that dream, is pursuing that dream. And actually, you know, after it's attained, I have finished the Iditarod. I don't know whether I'll ever go back again. And it's kind of like, wow, I did it. But now, what's left?
Well,
what else can I...
Are you going back up there this summer?
Yes, I am. I wondered if you were going to ask me about that. Yes, I'm leaving June 22nd. I'm heading for Alaska and for 7 days. I'm going to travel around by myself, camping out, having a wonderful time, seeing the interior, maybe going down to the K9 Peninsula, but traveling around a bit. And then I will be working on a dog lot. It's called a kennel for one of the mushers. Her name is Linda Plettner. And she has allowed me to come up there, and I will be watching the dogs being trained to become Iditarod dogs. And I will also be wearing a hat as a tour guide. And so as tourists come in and off the road, this is out in the wilderness in an area called Big Lake. Many tourists do come in. I will take them around to see her kennel and her dog lot and then go out on a sled ride. And this will be on wheels. So, yeah, that's what I'm going to be doing this. And I'm spending most of the summer up there doing this.
You know, you have an incredible positive view of life.
I hope so.
Can you?
That is from my mother. My mother is a very, very positive person. She'll never look at anything in a negative manner. And you know what? I want my own very own children to look at life that way. You have to be positive about things. You have to look at something and not in a negative manner. But what's good about this? What can you gain from this? How can this help other people? How can it enrich lives? It has to. Your life has to be positive. You have to look at life in a positive way. Makes it exciting.
I was going to ask you what the ingredients were, but you've covered them all.
Yes, I mean, it's just that's what life is all about. And I just positive, being a positive person, sure, you're going to have ups and downs. But to get through them, you have to be a positive person. And you look for goodness. Look for things that are going to make it better. And I have a lot of ups and downs in my own life and sad points. Or sometimes I start feeling a little low. And then I think about, gosh, okay, what have I done? What am I going to do? What is my life like right now? And so it wipes away anything that's negative because I'm blessed. I'm grateful. This world is delicious.
How can we end any better? What a wonderful experience this has been for me.
Well, thank you. And what a wonderful world it is,
yes.
Right?
And I really want to thank you for being with us. Our guest has been Finney, sometimes called Andrea Ofterheide, but Finney, who went on the Iditarod. And we're going to end up with one final piece from the songs from from Alaska, aren't they?
Yes, it's a CD that was written by Hobo Jim. And the last song you're going to hear is a very favorite of mine. And lots of the kids in my class love the song. It's called Wild and Free.
Okay,
yes?
That sounds like the way you live.
It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. It's certainly been a pleasure for me, and I hope so for our audience.
I hope so.
The program is Profiles. I'm Bob Willard. The station is WFIU. And thank you so much for spending the evening with us.
There's a part of me, wild and free. In my heart there's a wild wolf howling to the tall pine tree. It's a long cold trail that I've been on. There just doesn't seem to be an end to this way I've been gone. Oh, I can see that road spreading over the land. I see a young boy standing with a suitcase in his hand.
The program you just heard was recorded in the studios of WFIU in May of 1999. Christina Kuzmich, producer, engineering and editing by Michael Paskash and John Shelton. For WFIU, thanks for listening.